Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue. Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you. Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Hello again. Welcome to another edition of Pitch Pass. Thank you very much for downloading the episode. We've got a rocking and rolling episode. That was a really, really cliche thing to say. We do have a lot going on in the world of Columbus Crew. We'll talk with the Columbus Dispatch, Adam Jardy, who covers the Crew on a daily basis. Get a little scoop on maybe some hints on their rebrand, some hints on their new president, some hints on the team. Just a lot of hints, I think, from Adam Jardy. Also, we'll probably do some Oasis talk, just so you know. But first, we head to Kansas City. Sporting has been on a nice run of form, and they've embarked on their CONCACAF Champions League endeavor. We'll get into all that and more with Sporting KC and U.S. Men's National Team defender Matt Beasler. He joins us right now. Matt, hello. How are you, sir?
Going well.
First, you're a very busy man, as I can tell. How was Nicaragua?
It wasn't too bad. Yeah. Conditions were difficult. Field and all the Champions League away games, you know, it's tough no matter who you're playing, but we got a point and we're back home now, so it's all good.
Let me ask you, is it a situation, you chartered down, I would assume, you chartered a flight?
What's that?
Did you guys charter a flight down?
Yes, we did.
Is that, in a sense, easier traveling than how you do within league play, which is basically most times commercially?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Gosh, if we're given 100 options to take a charter flight or a commercial flight, 100 times the players are going to say yes to the charter.
So that's the one upside of having to do these midweek travels down to Central America.
Yeah, I mean it's never easy when you play a midweek game, especially in a different country, but. You know, we play the game at 8 o'clock and we're on a flight at 11 and getting home back to Kansas City, you know, at 3 or 4 in the morning, which it still doesn't sound that good when you talk about it like that. But, opposing the other option is to stay the night.
Yep.
in a hotel where you don't sleep very well. You know, the food is maybe not what you're used to. You know, the chance of getting delayed is high. And, you know, potentially you're getting back at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So you lose a whole day.
Yeah, and you don't have this situation where you can go out and get your practice in and now you're back on schedule getting ready for the weekend matches.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you only have 2 or 3 days to prepare anyways, 12 hours is a very big deal.
Well, I mentioned how busy you are. You came from World Cup right back, kind of had a couple of matches, then got right back into the All-Star thing, and now we're back in CONCACAF Champions League. You don't seem like the kind of guy that enjoys the hoopla surrounding the job. It seems like you love the sport, but the hoopla surrounding the sport, you can sometimes take or leave. Is that an accurate assessment? And if it is, how glad are you that we're getting into this phase where it's, okay, now we just got to worry about playing soccer?
I mean, I think I'm a little of both. I'm always just worried about playing soccer. I mean, that's the biggest thing. I'm worried about winning games. So if there's any time where, you know, some of the off the field stuff, is a distraction, then there's no question. I mean, that's got to get cut. But, at the same time, it's this is why you play.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be busy. You want to be playing in big games. You want to, you know, be playing in all-star games and traveling and, you know, doing interviews. I mean, that's why you play. This is professional sports. And, you know, a lot of those things are exciting. They're great memories to have.
I'm really glad to hear you say that because, you know, a lot of guys will go to that PC answer of, well, we're focused in on the match. But you're right. You know, when you're a kid dreaming of scoring big goals, you're a kid dreaming of scoring a big goal. And after you score that big goal as an 8-year-old, you do the fake interview with the sports commentators.
Yeah, I mean, I had the chance of getting on SportsCenter and doing an interview with Linda Cohn live on SportsCenter after the World Cup. And you know, part of me was hesitant because it was a major time commitment. It was in Bristol, Connecticut, and you had to go up there. But the other bigger part of me, you know, said, I've grown up as a kid watching SportsCenter my entire life. It's my all-time favorite show. And I get a chance to be on it and get interviewed as a pro soccer player. Like, I'm definitely taking this. And so I went up there, and it was an awesome experience. I'm so glad that I went.
Well, and you kind of glossed over the big thing, at least for me. I'm a huge Linda Cohn fan. Like, I love her work, and I also think that she's a very attractive older woman.
That was a factor too. No, it was awesome. I was way more nervous for the SportsCenter interview than any other game that I've played. I was like sweating and almost shaking. And then all of a sudden the interview starts and it felt like I was just having a conversation with somebody. You know, I think that's probably a good sign.
Definitely.
of a commentator in an interview. But she definitely just made me feel so comfortable. And, you know, 5 minutes passed and it felt like 30 seconds, but she was awesome.
You know, we mentioned how busy you are. You mentioned about things getting cut if need be. One of the things I would assume now will never be cut is your foot golf career. How'd that go for you?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun, actually. You know, that was another thing where I didn't know what to expect going in. I've obviously heard of foot golf, and I've seen some videos, but that was my first time playing, and so.
Well, for people who don't know what foot golf is, can you just give us a brief overview, or is it just as simple as you use your foot to play golf?
No, I mean it's actually on a real golf course. So, you know, there's real tee boxes, there's fairways, there's the rough, there's a green, and there's a pin. It feels like you're going out to the golf course to play a round. But the fact is that you just have a soccer ball and you're kicking it. And so there wasn't any crazy rules. The rules are pretty self-explanatory, just kind of like golf, but you use your foot. It took me we only played three holes because this was the day before the All-Star game and we didn't want to be on our feet too much, but,
sure.
I feel like it took me two holes to finally kind of figure it out, you know, how you wanted to drive the ball and how you wanted to putt. And then we only got to play one more hole. And so I wish I would have played longer, but it's a lot of fun, especially if you're a soccer fan. If you have good technique, it can be a lot of fun.
Do you feel like Bubba Watson on the tee box where you just feel like you can just boom it down the line or down the fairway?
That's exactly who I was trying to call myself, off the tee box. He's one of the longer hitters on
exactly.
the tour, I believe. So I definitely was trying to, you know, give myself the Bubba nickname. I don't know if it worked, though.
Now, we're here in D.C. I will ask you, I noticed that Boswell went with the side beret look or whatever he did. Did he try to talk you into that? Or did you just look at him like, dude, what's going on here?
He went for his own style.
Yeah.
I don't know Bobby too well. I got to know him on a personal level in the All-Star game, but you guys certainly know he's a guy that has a great personality and he likes to have fun. So he came up with that himself and he just, he was comfortable in his own skin and he didn't try and push it on me, that's for sure.
And we'll post the picture of the guys as they were lined up, ready to tee off at pitchpass.com. How hard was it to get you into those Argyle socks?
Oh, it took a little bit of convincing. But once I saw Tim Cahill flip them on, I knew if he was doing it that I had to as well.
Now, are you so fashion forward thinking that one of the reasons you tried to balk at the Argyle socks is because of the clash with the sneakers you were wearing?
Maybe. I hadn't thought about it like that. That's possible.
You've had an interesting summer with the World Cup, and then you were in the spotlight, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the whole new deal on the transfer thing wasn't one of the things that you were looking forward to talking about, as far as keeping that kind of that part of what was going on kind of private. Now that that's all wrapped up and done, I do have a couple of questions for you. I am an MLS snob, so I applaud you for the decision that you made. I know you've gone on record saying, you know, hey, look, it's my life. I have to make the decisions that are best for me. Looking at where you grew up and you know, who you grew up idolizing, how much of that played a role in you wanting to stay in Kansas City? And I'm speaking specifically about your love of George Brett and him being a guy that only played with one team and only played with one team in a smaller market.
I think that's a factor, but it's definitely not the main factor. I get a little annoyed if someone, you know, thinks that the only reason I stayed was because I'm from Kansas City and that I'm comfortable and that it's my hometown and a lot of my family's here. That's not the main reason why I stayed. It definitely is a factor, and I'm very thankful for that. But the main reason I stayed is because I want to play for this organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it's about. I love the team that we have right now. You know, the stadium atmosphere, in my opinion, is the top two in the league, maybe the best in the league. The facilities, you know, we're building, I knew this beforehand, but it got announced that we're building a $60 million practice facility that's going to be ready in a year. I really wanted to be a part of it still. And I love the direction that we're going. And I feel like I've helped build, you know, kind of what we have the last couple of years, and I want to continue building it and pushing it.
If this were Kansas City Wizards that you grew up watching, where it was an okay organization, then when these opportunities arise, you would have had to consider them a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, I considered all my options, even in this situation too. But once I found out, you know, more of the specifics of, you know, where I would be going, you know, transfer fees, it became very clear to me that, for one, it was going to take a lot to get me transferred over somewhere. And the second thing, you know, Sporting Kansas City came in and they made a major offer and they made a commitment, to myself. And so a lot of credit has to be given to them and given to the ownership. You know, they really stepped up. And they're really the ones that, you know, made this deal happen.
How much did you talk with Graham during this process, or was it one of those things where you both discussed and said, look, you'll do your thing, I'll do my thing, and we'll talk on the other side and see how it worked out for us?
We talked a lot. You know, we're best friends off the field, and, you know, we share a lot with each other. You know, certainly there's stuff that we keep private amongst ourselves, but, you know, this was something that, you know, we both talked about, and we both said from the beginning, like we said, we hope, for the other person that they can get the best deal possible, that they can end up in the best situation possible. So whether that's Sporting Kansas City or with another team, we'll see what happens, but we just wanted the best for each other. And, you know, it ended up, you know, being that we both got to stay in Kansas City, and you know, they gave us designated player contracts.
I don't know if you've felt this yet, and if you haven't, do you ever feel like maybe even this offseason when you sit down and kind of go over the events of 2014, do you ever feel like a trendsetter, a trailblazer, if you will, of guys who have spurned opportunities overseas to stay? For whatever reasons those were, but to stay and grow the league, and how you'll be thought of 10, 15, 20 years down the road?
To be honest with you, I don't really care about that. You know, that's been brought up to me a couple times. It certainly didn't go through my head while I was making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that could be an accurate statement. I think, you know, we're at this time where, You know, for the longest time, when a player started playing with the national team, the very first question was, okay, how soon is he going to leave?
Yep.
But where is he going next? And I don't know, I never really understood that, why it was like that. And I think now, specifically with these two deals that got done, I think it's awesome for the league. I think you're seeing you don't have to go somewhere just because everyone else is doing it. You can, if you're happy and if you're developing as a player, then why would you want to leave somewhere?
You know, and then I read your open letter that you gave to the fans of Sporting Kansas City, and the thing that struck me the most to that point was the fact that this is the team that you grew up rooting for. And, you know, I got to feel like there's a kid right now who has just started going to matches at Sporting Park who now has a chance to see you play as a kid, maybe up to a teenager, maybe even through high school, who now says to himself, yeah, this is what I want to do, rather than saying to themselves, well, I've got to do this and I've got to do this, then I've got to go overseas and do this, and this. There's another path now, and that's not a path that was available maybe even to you as a kid, and especially not to my generation of kids.
Yeah, I think it's a cool story. I think that's a very almost fun aspect to look at. I love hearing stories like that, and you know, sometimes I get chilled when I hear kids bring up, you know, kind of that story about looking up to some of the players on our team. So it's very cool, and it's humbling to hear that stuff. But you know, also too, that's one of the side reasons. You know, the main reason that we play is to win, and we love being competitive and playing professionally.
Getting back to actually action on the pitch, you guys went down to Nicaragua, drew 1-1, fielded basically your starting lineup, save for a couple of people. What did you guys learn from last year's experience that you brought into this year, and why? I don't want to say why did you field the lineup. That's the coach's decision. But you guys did want to get off to a strong start, as evidenced by the lineup you put out.
Well, I think I don't think the lineup is really a question. I mean, we at least our team, we've been playing Wednesday, Saturdays pretty much the whole season. So that's the rhythm that we're in right now. And I think it would almost be weird if we didn't play Wednesday, Saturday. It would almost be like there's too much time off. So that's not an issue for us, you know, playing midweek games. So we were all expecting to play, and we wanted to play. I think, you know, it would have been great to get a win down there, but considering the conditions and the team and the field and everything that we had to battle with, I think getting a draw is a good result for us, and now we take care of our two games at home, and we should be in a great spot.
And it's a big match this weekend. You guys are playing the team that is right on your heels, and that would be DC United. They went the other way and played, I don't want to say a second team, but they played a lot of the reserves. So in their mind, I would assume, they're feeling like they've got an advantage over you guys coming in more fresh with their starters. But you guys are at home, and you are back in action. How do you feel going into that match?
Well, this is a huge game. We've been looking at this one for a little bit. We definitely don't look ahead, but we all know the situation. They're a point or two behind us right now, and they have a game in hand. And we understand that us and them have kind of gained some separation between third place. And so this is just a very, very big game for us. And we want to make sure that we take advantage of the fact that we're playing at home, and we're the ones that need to drive the game and hopefully get 3 points.
We see a lot about we see visually the intensity of Peter Vermees. Give me a funny Peter Vermees story, just to take a little of the edge off of his public personality.
A fun TV story. Oh man, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah, I know. I know you were like, whoa, hang on. That's a tough question.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of Peter's best qualities, is that he puts everything he has into whatever he's doing. And, you know, he put so much time into preparation, and when the time comes, he's just so ready. And he just has this competitive nature in everything that he does. But it's always nice as a player to see him let his guard down a little bit. You know, certainly winning helps that. But specifically, I mean, I think there's times after games, you know, big wins where, you know, he'll kind of come in and the radio's playing and, you know, he'll turn up the stereo a little bit and, you know, sing along to some of the words, to some of the songs. Like, and us as players, you know, we're kind of caught off guard because, you know, we didn't expect him to know that song, but it's really cool when he comes in and, you know, he's just like one of us.
Okay, so what song has he thrown down on you that has kind of taken you aback that he has known the lyrics to?
I try and think. Well, right now we've been listening to, you know, the I'm the Man song.
Yes.
I don't know the name of it or who sings it, but that's a good one. I know that he likes that one.
He's a big fan of that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And before I let you go, Matt, I have to ask you to put your fantasy baseball hat on as we hit the home stretch for fantasy baseball. Your Royals are doing very well. I actually have the youngster Ventura on my team. What can I expect from him for the last part of the last month or so of the season?
Well, hopefully everybody stays hot.
Yes.
You know, I think being in a pennant race like they are right now, I think that helps the individuals because you're held to a higher expectation. So you're going to be playing at a higher level every single day, and hopefully that will translate to personal stats for your guys.
How often are you out at the at games at Kauffman?
Well, this summer's been different.
Yeah,
because I really haven't had much time, but. You know, I try and make as many games as I can. I would say, you know, at least 5 or 6 a year. For me, it's difficult because, you know, I was born in 87, and the last time we made the playoffs was 85.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've never experienced it, and so I've always been a little bit skeptical that this is the year because I've been hearing that for the last 10 years. But it's great now. I'm telling you, there's a buzz around the city with us and the Royals in first place right now.
Totally.
It's awesome.
Well, I have my fingers crossed for you that you get to experience a baseball playoff game. And I also hope that you do well in the league. Now, you see, as a DC United fan, you see how I have to preface it with do well. I don't. It's very vague. I leave it out there. But do well, whatever that means to you, is how I want you to take it.
If it was any different, then we'd have a problem. I expect that from you.
Matt, congratulations on a fantastic summer, and best of luck to you the rest of the season, my friend.
All right, thank you.
It's Matt Beisler from Sporting Kansas City. I enjoy talking to him. For some reason, I thought he would be like a reserved, kind of buttoned-up guy, but that was a good conversation. This is why we do this. We try to not to do the X's and O's, and more of the get to know these guys outside of their kit or their uniforms, if you will. Not in that sense. Can you please get your mind out of the gutter? As we move on, the team that you have maybe not been thinking about for the last few years, flying under the radar, are doing their best to put their hands up as a team that you need to watch in MLS. I'm talking about Columbus Crew. A lot going on with the Crew in the last month or so. We'll go over all that and maybe more with the Columbus Dispatch's Adam Jardy. He joins us right now. Adam, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Good. You know, the fun thing is, and I just mentioned it as we were introducing you about how, you know, the Crew have flown under the radar as far as having a profile in not just on the national stage, but in the league itself. And now they've got a lot going on, which is exciting. And it's got to be exciting for you to cover because, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong. I felt like this might have been like a sleepy beat for a while. And now it's kind of like one of those things where every day I feel like they're dropping something on us.
Well, I mean, I guess I would counter that by saying that I'm not sure there is a sleepy beat when you're trying to figure out the rules in Major League Soccer.
Very, very true. Very true.
But yes, aside from that, it's been a lot more busier really since Anthony Precourt took control of the team last summer. There were so many things that on the beat prior to that, when you'd be presented maybe with a situation or someone would run a hypothetical past you and you would say, well, there's no way the Hunts are going to go for that.
Yeah.
Or there's no way the Hunts are going to do this. And then, you know, obviously you have 15 odd and however many years of institutionalized knowledge there that suddenly that's all off the books and it's a fresh approach and it's a fresh you know, situation all around. So suddenly you're looking at, you don't know what's out of bounds. You don't know like what isn't a possibility, because with a new owner, just about anything's possible. So it's, yeah, they're suddenly in the last year, it's a lot different team to cover.
Has it been just a matter of a guy who has never owned a sports franchise before owning a sports franchise, as opposed to a legendary family, especially in the sporting world? Has that been the only difference between the Hunts and Precourt, or is he bringing something else to the table other than that wild card factor?
I think the biggest thing is that it's just different. I don't know that, you know, good, bad, whatever. It's just different. I mean, you have a guy who it's all new to him. And, you know, when you're trying to sell more tickets and, you know, increase your visibility and make your franchise more, more accessible and more recognized, it helps to have a new messenger every once in a while. And that's not to say anything negative on the Hunts, but, you know, you've sort of felt like maybe this wasn't their top priority when it came to the sports world. And whereas now you have a guy who, you know, he doesn't live here. He's constantly in contact here. And, you know, this is his, as far as, you know, sports go, this is what he does. Like, this is his number one, unobstructed priority. And so I think that's probably the biggest difference, I would say, is just that, you know, this guy he's completely all in.
We'll talk about the fans' reaction to a possible or now a definite rebranding in just a few minutes. But I did want to ask you about the fans' reaction to Precourt. You talked about what he's bringing differently to the table. You talk about the excitement surrounding the club. Is that translating to the fans? Is there a palpable difference in the stands that, hey, we've got a guy here who is excited to own this team and is willing to do what it takes to make this team successful?
Well, attendance is up. And so, I mean, if you want to measure in that way, I mean, they're up, I think like 6% attendance wise from last year. They've had three sellouts this season, which is only the second time in team history that's happened, or at least since they moved to Crew Stadium. So, you know, if you want to measure it that way, then yeah, it certainly has made an impact. I think to me, though, if you were to talk to maybe some of the more passionate fans or the fans who are there every game, you know, there's probably a sense of maybe the honeymoon just coming off a little bit, because we're sitting here and they weren't able to bring in any sort of big name during when the transfer window was open. They still haven't addressed the need for a striker. They've got all this allocation money and they've made a lot of moves to free up cap space and they haven't done anything with it. So I think that, you know, yes, the fans are, for the most part, yes, they're energized and they're excited about what's going on here. But I think there is a little level of frustration creeping into that excitement and that new ownership hasn't been able to make that plunge and bring in, you know, some guys that can score some goals.
You know, you mentioned the transfer window. How much of that is on the Crew? And I know there's no one will ever probably know the full story. I give the Crew credit for their honesty and their openness in the mixed Discarude situation. But how much is that, or how much of the fan reaction or the public reaction has been anti-Crew? Because it seems to me as if they did their best and it kind of a weird circumstance is the reason why it didn't work out.
I don't think that there's a whole lot of anti-Crew that comes out of it. I mean, I was recently followed by a fake Twitter profile that popped up for Mick Discarude the dad, which was less than flattering toward him. So I think that maybe gives you some indication about how some people feel about everything here in Columbus. It was a weird situation the way everything went down. I don't think that door is completely closed. I do think there are chances down the road for them to revisit some of those conversations. I just think there is a frustration level to a certain degree with the fact that for all the, you know, effort that they put in and, you know, regardless of why the deal broke down, still at the end of the day, you'd rather win games than almost sign a player. And I think that's kind of where some of the disconnect continues to lie with some of the more passionate fans.
I feel like a frustration would be the fact that here you had a guy who is a high profile guy in this country and who wanted to go to Columbus. And that's no knock against Columbus. I'm in D.C. and I feel like D.C. also goes to that situation. Every guy that comes back, or every international that wants to come and play in MLS, wants to play in one of two or three or maybe even four towns. So you had a guy that was willing to come to Columbus and do his thing in Columbus, and the fact that it didn't work out makes the situation even more frustrating.
Yeah, well, certainly, and in this case too, Mix is a guy that, I mean, for the performance that he put in when he was last year with the national team, I mean, the fans here love Mix. I mean, it's hard to overstate. I mean, I almost think of him as like a folk hero here. And so after his last performance with the national team, it was like a joke, or I don't even know how you would want to put it. You know, the fans started, you know, hashtag Mix this group to Columbus Crew, and it was like this thing. And then suddenly you realize that it very almost was legit. Like that almost happened after the fans just latched onto him for, you know, no appreciable reason other than he had a really good game. You know, the whole thing just kind of stings a little bit, because I think that nobody thought it was a possibility until suddenly you found out that it almost happened and it wasn't going to happen.
I see that Anthony Precourt has got his business side of the team in order. He did the soccer stuff early, obviously, with bringing in Greg Berhalter. Why wait till now to bring in a president of business operations?
Well, the way that they sort of structure their calendar year, this September is when they really start kind of putting things into motion for next year. It's when they start a lot of their planning for next season. It's when they start a lot of their, you know, coming up, figuring out their goals and their approaches on things. And so when they let go Mark McCullers back in March, who had been with the team for 15 years, the explanation behind it was that gave them time to spend the next couple of months being methodical and being thorough and finding their guy and having him in place in time to start their 2015 planning. So that's why you have a guy being announced this past weekend as their new director of business operations, because now that they can really sort of turn the page past 2014 and start planning ahead.
And I'm sure it didn't have anything to do with it, but I guess, is Precourt signing off? Was he signing off on the business decisions before this point? And maybe this whole mixed situation accelerated the process of getting a president and a guy who was in charge of all business operations in place?
I don't think that the mixed situation had anything really to do with them hiring Andy Lockbane as the business guy. Now, I think that, I'm not really sure. Other than, I mean, it's just a case of, he's involved in a lot of things since they let go of Mark McCullers in March. Anthony's been in, he's talked about how he's been more involved in the day to day. It hasn't really meant he's been here more. I mean, I've seen him, a handful of times since March, a lot of Skype, a lot of phone interviews and things like that he's done to, sort of keep his presence going. But I'm not sure that those two are really related.
But this helps, though, having a guy in Columbus handling the business and being a face for the business side of the franchise.
Oh, it helps immeasurably. I mean, they've got some well-publicized business goals here that need met in the next couple of years, where they've been trying to sell naming rights to Crew Stadium since it opened.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to. They've been very vocal about their goal of reaching 10,000 season tickets, which remains a goal. They're also, at the same time, that it seems like there's a little bit more of a push toward trying to sell out more games and maybe focus on that a little bit more than the number of season tickets that they have. But either way, I mean, their goals that need met, so they can get to some sort of financial position where they feel that they're a little bit more stable. And they're not there yet. Those are objectives that need met, not today, not tomorrow, not even this year or next year, but in the next couple of years, because in that press conference they had on Saturday, Anthony Precourt again reiterated that, Crew Stadium is their home for now, but, a couple of years down the road here, you seriously have to sit down and say, okay, do we renovate or do we move somewhere else within the city? And in order for them to be able to have those kinds of conversations, they need to, increase their revenue. And so having a business guy who's in place, who's here, who has local ties, which Andy does, that those are all things that need to happen for them to continue to move forward. And it's immensely, I guess we'll see, in a couple of years, how good of a job Andy Lockbane's able to do. But having a guy on the ground here and working on some of those issues is certainly preferential to having, Anthony do his best while he's in San Francisco.
You brought up Crew Stadium. That's a perfect jump off point to the exciting, the big news in Columbus Crew land. And that is the announcement that the rebrand or the new logo will be unveiled on October 8th. I guess the first question is there any chance that they can keep this logo, this rebrand under wraps for another 6 weeks or so?
You know, I think it will probably be a little bit easier than you might expect, because I know that they're really keeping a lot of that, you know, heavily under wraps, to the point where if something were to get leaked, it would be incredibly traceable. And it's not necessarily like, you know, if you're, for example, trying to figure out who the new director of business operations is going to be, and you're spending a couple of days making phone calls, you know, maybe someone knows a name and they can tell you a name.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to, you know, get a hold of a visual image of something that is going to be released, it presents just a different set of challenges to me. And so, you know, I know they've worked very hard on this for a very long time. And I know that, you know, they're very closely guarding what they want the final product to be. I've heard different things about what it will ultimately look like, but I'm not certain that anybody's really going to get to see it, you know, until that unveiling date.
My concern, if I'm the Crew, is, look, Adam Jardy thinks they might be announcing a new director of business operations. He's a reporter. He covers the team for Columbus Dispatch. He's going to dig and do some calls. The average fan isn't even going to care enough to do any digging. When you talk about a rebrand, if you talk about a new logo, that gets everybody in the town excited. Now you've got everybody on this kind of scavenger hunt to go, okay, well, is somebody printing up new shirts, or are there scarves somewhere out there? Did somebody snap a picture inside of a warehouse where there's a production of new? That kind of stuff starts to snowball when you talk about something exciting like this.
That is a very good point, and I'm hopeful that as people continue to be you know, a little bit more intrigued by this, and maybe they hear this or they see that you know, they know that my Twitter handle is at Adam Jardy, and then you know, they have access to my email, because you're right, this is something that, I mean, even friends of mine who are here in town, or, you know, like my dad lives in Toledo, which is 2.5 hours away, and I mean, he doesn't get Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, so he can't even watch the Crew anymore. But he's interested in what this new logo is going to look like and what this rebranding is going to be. So you're right. There's certainly a much higher interest level, and there's more people kind of snooping around. So, you know, it will be a challenge for them to keep it under wraps. But I don't know. I've kind of got a feeling that, you know, they might find a way this time.
And by the way, that could be all by design as well. You've got people who aren't even thinking about the Crew, and I'm talking about even fan groups from teams across MLS. Now they're thinking about the Crew, and for 6 weeks it's going to be a cat and mouse scavenger hunt, hide and go seek thing of, is this the new logo? Is this the new logo? And at the end of the day, we're talking about the Crew.
Sure. No, that absolutely makes sense. It makes me think back to before the World Cup, when, you know, there were randomly, you'd see, oh, this team's jersey has leaked. This team's jersey. I mean, you're right. I mean, somewhere in China, there could be a warehouse that's going to start printing out, you know, jerseys with the new logo on it that will be distributed on that date in October. And, you know, some person from Adidas could be there and they take a photo. And then, yeah, I mean, that certainly could make a difference. If someone is able to, you know, dig this out before it happens, I would imagine it would be from some sort of third party source like that, as opposed to somebody connected to the team.
By the way, the Twitter handle is at Adam Jardy, and that's J-A-R-D-Y for all of your Crew leaks. And, you know, I keep stumbling over what I'm calling it, logo, rebrand. What, as far as you know, is it at this point?
Well, the things that I get asked the most, that I can dispel right now, the team will remain named the Crew.
Okay.
It's not changing, and the colors are not changing. You'll still see black and yellow. Those are things that Anthony Precourt from day one said he has no qualms about. Those are not changing. The YMCA Village People Construction Worker logo, on the other hand, that will be gone. So what you're probably looking at, from what I've been able to gather, different people that I've talked to, it's likely you'll see a circular logo. Expect to see the Columbus skyline in there somewhere, because I know they've talked about wanting to make sure that when you look at the logo, that Columbus is identifiable, and it's not when you look at it now. So I'm expecting the skyline to be in there somewhere. And I think the number 96 will probably be in there somewhere as well. Those are the concrete details that I know right now. Everything else, as far as the actual composition of it, I do know they partnered with a local brand agency to help, you know, sort of formulate it. And I know Adidas has been involved in the talks with it, and Major League Soccer has had their say as well. So there's a lot of parties that sort of went into helping shape this.
Now, I've never been to Columbus. I talked to Brian Strauss, though, last year, right around the time that Precourt purchased the Crew. And, you know, one of his things was when they're doing the rebrand, the word Crew is a bit of a misnomer when you think Columbus and you think of a blue collar town, which it actually is not a blue collar town. It's a very a technology type of town. So why is it that the Crew name, do you think, is safe at this point?
I think it's just because, I think you want to hold on to some of the tradition. I mean, given that they're an original team and, you know, you think of Crew Stadium when you think of the first major, you know, soccer-specific stadium, you know, there's a lot of, I think, for better or worse, cachet that comes with the name the Crew. And, I mean, I guess aside from, you know, you're walking through an airport and, you know, people are saying, oh, are you part of the rowing team? Like, that's, you know, something I know the players get every now and then when the people just see Crew. But I just, my understanding is that Anthony Precourt likes the name, and, you know, he feels that there's a solid sense of tradition and history that go along with it. And, you know, you're going to change some things, but I guess you don't have to change everything.
The people that I follow on Twitter that are Crew supporters, to me, the vibe I'm getting is that they are excited about this change rather than kind of lamenting a loss of history or whatever. Is that due to the fact that a lot of the things that you know and love about the Crew are going to remain the same, and the thing that maybe you don't feel so great about is the logo, and that is going to change?
I would think so. I mean, I think I think you would be hard pressed right now if you just grabbed a random person off the street, held that logo in front of them and said, do you like this? I think you'd be hard pressed to find a lot of people that like it. And I mean, you know, and it served its purpose. It's obviously, you know, been an iconic, you know, for better or worse, you know, logo here in professional sports for, you know, 20 odd years or whatever. I guess maybe not quite 20 yet, but still, I mean, it's a part of the tradition, it's a part of the history. And, you know, I mean, in a way, I almost think in a couple of years, at some point, it'll look back on, like, you know, for example, the old Cleveland Browns Brownie the Elf logo that was like their logo in the 50s, that, you know, became so goofy and comical that they, you know, you didn't see it for a long, long time. Now it's on hats, it's on shirts, you see it, people kind of celebrate it. I imagine this logo will be like that maybe in 15 years or something like that.
What's the vibe, and I know you kind of touched on it earlier, on Crew Stadium? As an outsider, you go, oh, it's cute. In that it's very simple, but it was the first. It's got that going for it. It is the kind of unofficial home for USA versus Mexico. There's a lot of history, and if you look at it in terms of, say, baseball stadiums, it could be the Fenway or Wrigley Field of MLS at some point. That's said as an outsider who never has to go to Crew Stadium and see any matches there. What is the vibe? Do you feel like it does have to be renovated, or is it outdated to the point where we need to get rid of it? And at some point, if we do decide to get rid of Crew Stadium, will it turn into Tiger Stadium where you go, man, we shouldn't have knocked that thing down?
You know, it's such a multifaceted question because of what it means to everybody from an emotional standpoint. No one that goes there would argue that it's state of the art, or that, you know, it's among the, you know, upper half of stadiums in the league. I mean, it's clearly behind in a lot of ways. So it's you have to look at it from that point, and you have to look at it from the emotional standpoint, what it means to people, what it's meant to U.S. soccer. It's not there's no easy answers when it comes to that. And I think part of the situation too is just its location, where it's on the Ohio State Fairgrounds. It's grid marked on the one side by a freeway. There's nowhere to expand. There's nothing within walking distance. You can't walk to a bar. You can't walk to a restaurant. You can't. I mean, you can, but you have to cross railroad tracks.
Yeah.
You have to walk a fair distance. So it's. I think that honestly, if you had Crew Stadium as it is, and it was in, I don't know, downtown or something like that, that the fact that the stadium itself is becoming dated wouldn't really have as much of an impact, because you would be able to enhance the things around the stadium to make the overall experience better. But they don't have that opportunity here. They can't build anything in the parking lot. You know, they can't expand anywhere. I mean, they have their hunk of land and that's it. And so that's sort of the unfortunate reality in all this, is that, you know, for all the great things that the stadium has meant to people, you know, if they want to, you know, figure out a way to maintain or to, you know, to be a consistent, proven, you know, hot ticket, not only in town, but in the league, they have to find a way to spice that up. And whether that is trying to find some sort of land that's available downtown where the NHL team resides and the minor league baseball team resides, you know, if you can make that happen, that maybe that's something you have to look at. I don't know what sort of renovations you can really do to the stadium. I mean, I guess that's not really my area of expertise. I don't know how much can structurally or physically be done to make it more appealing. To me, it's just the fact there's a lack of amenities around it. It's not always easy to get into and out of after a game. And, you know, there's nowhere to expand.
There's only one player that I would like to ask you about. And the reason is I just read a great article on MLSsoccer.com about him, and that would be Tony Chani. I feel like he's been lost in the shuffle just because he's been around so long and kind of been teasing us with his ability so long. And I think maybe even this year, even when I tune into crew matches, I'm more looking at Will Trapp in the midfield than I am Tony Chani. Where is he at right now? And is what we are seeing now him fully developed? And by that, I mean the consistency to do it game in and game out.
You know, the consistency is not 100% there yet, and I think he'd probably be the first one to tell you that. But when you look at just from a number standpoint, he's played more minutes than any other field player on the team. He's fourth in MLS in total minutes played, or at least he was going into last night's games. I haven't checked since then. He has meant as much to the Crew's playoff positioning this season as anybody. And that being said, he's had some nights when he's not been very effective. But I think what was interesting was this past game against L.A., with so many eyes watching them and being a sellout crowd and all the things that game meant to a lot of different people, he played his best game of the season. I mean, he was all over the field. And you start to see the potential that everyone knows is there in a guy like Tony Chani. I mean, you look at the guy, he's athletic, he's strong, he's quick. I mean, you've been wondering, okay, when is this guy going to figure it out? I thought for sure he was on his way out after last season. I mean, I thought he had worn out his welcome here, and the Crew would be the latest team to just say, okay, well, here you go, other team, good luck. You know, maybe you can figure it out. But, you know, he has fit into Greg Berhalter's system. He's gained the confidence that he has not had. I mean, that's been a big thing with him the last two seasons under the Robert Barziha era. You know, he would play maybe four or five games, and maybe it wouldn't go all that well, and then he'd get yanked, and he wouldn't be in the 18 for a couple of weeks, and then maybe he plays as a reserve, and then he's out again. So the fact that they've plugged him in the lineup and said, go, we've got your back, we believe in you, that sort of enabled him to maybe stop worrying about those mistakes that were holding him back before and realize that as long as he's out there doing what they're asking, he's going to screw up occasionally, but they're okay with that. That's a trade-off they're willing to make. And that level of confidence has made him into, I mean, there are fans that have made the argument, and I can listen to it, that he could be the team's most valuable player this year. Just from where he's come from to where he is now and what he means to their success in the midfield. I mean, it's his turnaround. It is a big story, and it's easy to overlook him when you've got, you know, you're pairing him in the midfield with Will Trapp, and you got Federico Higuain in front of him, you know, spraying balls all over the place, putting guys in position. I mean, it's Tony Chani, he's a guy that can be overlooked, but he shouldn't be.
So you mentioned the LA Galaxy match, a huge game for Columbus. You mentioned it was the first match, the away match for Landon Donovan, I think. So there was a lot of extra eyes there. It's the Galaxy, so a lot of extra eyes there. And Crew took him to the woodshed. This has got to be kind of exciting if you are a Crew fan, because most of the season they've been treading water, had some good spurts, had some bad spurts, but you come off of that match and looking at their next three matches coming up, you've got Houston at home. You could put a nail in the Houston playoff coffin if you go in there and get your 3 points. You got Montreal on the road. Montreal is focused on CONCACAF Champions League. Then you got Chivas USA. So a spot where you could pick up 9 points, tack it on to the 3 points you've already got in your back pocket. 12 points could put you safely in a playoff position after this slate of games.
Oh yeah, I mean that win was the Crew playing at its optimum level. I mean, there wasn't a bad performance across the board. Everyone was able to pretty much do what they were supposed to do. That's the most dominating game I think I've seen. Well, the 3-0 win against DC United at the beginning of the season was pretty lopsided, I felt as well. But first game of the year, you never, you know, teams feeling each other out. for this to come like this late in the season and to take a team that had been on a run like LA had been on and to just completely dominate them the way that they did was stunning. I mean, I'm not sure to see the Crew play under that kind of spotlight with that kind of a crowd and to play that well, I don't think that's happened since I've been on the beat. Normally in those situations, that's when you see this team fold. But they put it together. They don't want to say it's a statement, and they don't want to, you know, I mean, there's still 10 games left, and it wasn't against an Eastern Conference team. So, I mean, you want the points, but it's not like a six-point swing. But you look like you started to mention, I mean, you look at the rest of their schedule. They've got 10 games left. Nine of them are against teams that are out of the playoff position right now. They still got two against Houston. They still got two against Montreal. I think they have two against New England. The only playoff team left in the schedule is New York. So if you want to talk about a team that, for all of its flaws in various areas of the field, should make the playoffs,
yeah,
given what we know now and what lies ahead, it's the Crew. I mean, they're in fourth place right now, and they don't play anybody in the last 10 games.
And that,
there's no excuse.
Exactly, and that's kind of my point is, it's not like they're fighting for a playoff spot. They're in a playoff spot, and you know, with this next three run of games, with the 3 points they've already got in their pocket, this is their chance to separate themselves from five and six, not get themselves into six or five.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is where they can maintain their spot. I mean, I'm not sure that I necessarily see them, you know, passing. Like, they're 2 points behind Toronto. Toronto's got two games in hand. And then, you know, you're 10 points behind DC. I mean, you know, I don't see them, you know, moving up any higher than fourth. But, I mean, you know, there's no reason to think that they can't finish fourth, just given what's left ahead of them. And they've got all the momentum that they need going into these final 10 games.
And
they harness it?
And then on top of that, the scheduling gods have smiled upon them in that these next three matches, and including last week, so the four matches run they're on, are just Saturday, 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 Sunday. I think there's a Sunday game in there as well. They don't have to worry about these midweek games that a lot of the other teams throughout the league are starting to play and is going to start wearing on them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every game that they have from here on out is a weekend. I mean, I think they're 8 Saturday and 2 Sunday games. So you're not really going to be running into fatigue. You're not playing in any other competition. You're just playing these games. You've got your roster is essentially healthy. You know, they're in position. This is the best position they've been in a couple of years to make the playoffs.
It's exciting if you're a Crew fan. I have one last thing for you. I guess the most important question, Adam, before I let you go. Do you take a full Oasis reunion if it happens, or would you be satisfied if Noel says, I'm going out with the High Flying Birds or whatever his side project is, we're going to play some of those songs and we're going to mix in Oasis songs as well?
Well, you know, that was the last tour for Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds.
Oh, so he did Oasis songs during that tour.
He did the Oasis. He said he wouldn't do Oasis songs that were synonymous with Liam's voice.
Which is so what?
You know, songs like Don't Look Back in Anger, Little by Little. He played Supersonic on the acoustic guitar.
Okay,
so
all right.
Different. So, you know, there's some leeway there. You know, I think that if they reunite, it will be next summer to celebrate the 20th anniversary of What's the Story, Morning Glory. If it happens, that will be, whether it's reuniting at Glastonbury,
yes,
whether it's, you know, some sort of one-off at like Nebworth, you know, that would be it. Otherwise, I just, you know, at this point, they're grown up enough, and you know, they're doing their own thing enough that I don't think they need each other anymore. And you know, if it happens, the one thing I can promise you is that if it happens, regardless of cost or timing or anything, I will be happy to give you a full report when I return.
Okay, well, I had two questions for you. Let's go to the second question first. So if they say, look, it's a one-off at Glastonbury, you're heading over and you're going to be there for that festival to see them.
Without question. I've always
Without
wanted to go
question, he says.
I've always wanted to go, and I've never been able to swing it. It wouldn't even. My wife, she understands. She knows. She says,
it's the
go.
Thing. Yeah. Well, now, so question one is, if they say, you know what, we're doing it. We're spending 2015 celebrating What's the Story, Morning Glory. Let's say we're going to do the album in its entirety, take a break, come back, do a second set of non-tracks from those albums, and we're going to just do a world tour. What are the chances it gets too close to you before it falls apart?
Ooh.
That's my point.
Chances are high. Let's put it that way. I mean, that's why I'm not sure I can envision a tour. I don't think I can see those guys, you know, going around the world with each other again for an extended period of time. You know, maybe they can swallow the egos and the, you know, all the heart, all the hurt and everything and put it behind them for one show in front of 100,000 people. I'm not sure I see a world tour. If there's a world tour, I'd be buying my tickets for the front leg and not the back leg.
And that's exactly what I was going to tell you. Excellent job. And by the way, again, at Adam Jardy, J-A-R-D-Y, for your crew logo leaks and your Oasis reunion tour rumors. Both of them go right to Adam's Twitter page.
A man of all trades, what can I say?
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.